niche is real important, and then it's okay to experiment outside the niche to try to transition to the next. And like for build to rent, you don't have to start with a ton of houses. You heard we started with a small group, and you know, even just try building one. And I wouldn't have given that advice a year and a half, 2 years ago, because the material supply issue was just so dreadful for really small builders. But I think that's starting to come online. But you can always experiment with one. You know, if you're a rehabber out there, you know, and you want to try building one house, it's probably not going to kill you, you know, and you'll learn so much from that first house. So try one. Same thing with investors out there. If you've owned older properties, maybe look at trying one new construction. See where it is. Maybe it is a higher buy-in and different what you're looking for. But it's always good to, again, experiment, put something on the track and see how it actually performs against your norm. That's how I've continued to evolve, Rob.
Welcome to the Income Flip Podcast, a podcast about real estate entrepreneurs, visionaries, and the legacies behind the stories they're creating. I'm your host, Rob Chavez, and on today's episode, I have Jim Shields from Jacksonville, Florida. Now, Jim is an expert in the built-to-rent space. This is where they build properties for real estate investors, units 1 to 4, and help them build wealth. But he didn't start there. He started buying homes 24 years ago, just fixing and flipping them and doing rentals in older neighborhoods. And by the time he got to 200 properties, like, he thought he was set. But he learned otherwise. He learned that more isn't better. And it's really what helped him kind of pivot into the built-to-rent space. In fact, he almost lost it all in 2008. So I want you to listen into this podcast because there's so much wisdom sprinkled throughout that can only come from somebody that's been playing the game for some time. I know you're going to learn a ton, so tune in. Jim, welcome to the Income Flip, brother. How are you?
Good, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. It's my pleasure. You know, it's been hot as anything here on the East Coast, in Virginia. I'm just curious, what's it like today in Jacksonville, Florida?
It's Florida hot, but I'm right next to the ocean, so that helps.
That definitely helps. That definitely helps. Hey, well, I appreciate you spending some time with our grid community. What I wanted to do was unpack a little bit about this build to build a kind of like rent space, right? Build to own space. Yeah. And I want to, but before we dive into that, what I want to do is go back in time and understand a little bit about your journey and how you even got into this wonderful world of real estate investing and what brought you to where you are today.
Yeah. So I've been a real estate investor for 24 years now. That doesn't even sound right. I was that age when I got into it. So holy cow, doubled the age, and a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. But I started in California, and a mentor of mine taught me that if you're really going to be good at real estate, you want to be able to try to say what you do in one sentence. And that was a great lesson for me. So when I first started out, I would buy, fix, and resell HUD foreclosures. I was doing that in a little market called Bakersfield, California. Mm-hmm. And then I started to buy, fix, and rent HUD foreclosures and other distressed properties. And then around 2004, it was getting crazy out in California, and I left because I didn't know the meltdown was going to happen, but just the numbers didn't make sense. So I came to Florida, started buying rentals again, and then the meltdown happened. We were very lucky to survive that, you know, be heavily invested in California and Florida. But also what happened was the foreclosure market really opened up, as you know, at the end of 08, and there was just everything was on sale. So we built a business doing bulk foreclosures where we buy them, renovate them, and either keep them for ourselves as rental or work with other investors. Hmm. And that niche did really, really well for us. But there were a lot of headaches, a lot of setbacks with rehabbing older properties. And I don't have to say that to all the rehabbers out there. So by about 2014, 15, starting to get pretty busy here, Rob, in the Northeast Florida area. Everyone wanted to be buying fixer-uppers. So me and my now building partner said, what if we actually built our own properties instead of looked for the older properties to fix up? So we experimented with our first 28 properties, you know, that were old, a couple of extra lots from a bigger development that had sold the final lots. And, you know, that first year we did $3 million in property. Last year we did $185 million in property contracts. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It took off in 9 years. And there was a lot to the build to rent that we found we couldn't scale with the fixing up old foreclosures. So it's been a really good thing for us, for our clients. And, you know, you hear about it now in the Wall Street Journal. The big financial newspapers are talking about build-to-rent when the term didn't even really exist 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of money in the space now. Depending on the area, I think it can be really well. And it's definitely been my favorite niche in real estate so far.
Hmm. Well, let's unpack that a little bit. Explain to our audience what the build-to-rent space looks like. What is
it? Yeah, it's a great question. What we do is we go into high growth areas in Florida. You know, we started in Jacksonville and then grew into another dozen markets in Florida. But we go to high growth markets in Florida that have population growth, economic growth, a good affordability index, which just means the average family income per household can buy the average house for that area. And then something desirable about the area, what's drawing them there, and then healthy supply and demand. Obviously, you're building houses. You want supply and demand to be, you know, in healthy equilibrium. So we like to go where there's a need for houses, not an oversupply. And we help investors build portfolios with new construction properties. And the advantage I've seen, you know, from doing thousands of older rehab properties to new construction, there's less headaches, less maintenance and repairs. We call it the three-year curse, Rob. You know, I own a lot of older properties, but after 3 years, I know my maintenance and repairs is going up. I got a budget for it. Mm-hmm. Even if I do a new roof, heating and cooling, plumbing, upgrade electric, kitchens, baths, it just, there's been more. And we haven't seen that three-year curse hit with our new construction properties 9 years in, because we were able to build them with more durability right from the get-go. So the materials we're using are better quality than were used, you know, back in the era that we were taking over from. So there's less guesswork, less involvement. Most of our investors we work with, they're really busy. They have a successful business or career, and they're wanting to be involved in real estate, but not get their hands too dirty. And that's what new construction has allowed us. We can see the amount of time, the amount of turnover goes down significantly with the new construction model.
So let's unpack that new construction model. And by the way, and then when I'm going to go back and I'm going to unpack a little bit more about your background, because I'm interested. Yeah, yeah. Right. But let's unpack this. What does the average purchase look like? What's the rent to purchase ratio? Just averages, right?
So we focus on single families, duplexes, and quads. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we build investment property for our investors. You know, the big national home builders, you'll never see them building duplexes or quads. And that's mm-hmm. an advantage to us. More roofs under, more tenants under one roof, one loan. You know, a lot of our people like that Fannie Freddie financing. So that's,
I was going to say, that's what I like about it. It's kind of that Fannie Freddie Fannie financing. That's just 1-4, right?
Exactly. 1-4, you know, get those good rates, easier qualifying. It's a great model. And, you know, that ranges our properties from about 240,000 to about 800,000. So that's going from a single family up to a quad. You know, right now our we're looking at a 5-7 cap on our properties. You know, so with cash flow, we can get in anywhere from 6-11% cash on cash return. So we're averaging below the 1% rule that a lot of us are taught to follow for, you know, getting a house, fixing it up and renting it. One thing I've learned is the less turnover and maintenance and repairs, and just even the growth patterns we've seen with our new construction rentals has been made up for that and then some.
Sure. Like on the opposite side of the spectrum, right, you can go into areas and that aren't so great, the product's older, and, you know, get seduced by the fact that, whoa, I could buy this duplex for $50,000, I get $1,000 a month, right? So it'd be like the 2% rule, but then only to find out that, god, the tenant turnover's huge, the repairs on those assets monstrous, right? Just they're ridden hard, they're lived in hard. It's hard to make those numbers work, right?
It is.
So,
and sometimes it gets worse, Rob. At least it did for me. The higher you go, I was of this old school thing. Probably about 20 years ago, it was the 100 house club. Once you got 100 houses, life was grand. You were set. It was easy street. Well, I way surpassed the 100 house club. But the problem is, if all those things you just listed are happening, it can actually get worse quick. Mm-hmm. So today, and, you know, and that nearly sunk me in 08, nearly mm-hmm. sunk. Today, Rob, I own way less property, but somehow I have way more equity and way more cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you? That's okay. been a big lesson for me.
So let's unpack that lesson, because there's a lot of wisdom there. Right? I remember when I went through this, I remember I used to think that more was better.
Yeah.
And then I was like, whoa, wait a second. More is definitely not better, right? You know, there's this balance between those two. And so let's go back in 2007, 2008, like, you're buying these older properties, right? And I know that there's a lot of older stock properties in Florida, right? Yeah. Like, there's just what did life look like during that time? Like, I want to hear, like, the battle scars, the lessons learned, right? Because there's so much that people can learn, and we could save them a lot of pain by just helping them bring their future into today, you know, into the present. So what did that look like, having 100+ houses that were maybe not quite what you thought?
It was a huge headache. It was like cooking a recipe in your kitchen that you were so proud of and sitting down to eat it, and it doesn't taste good, and you got to pretend to like it. That's what I would compare it to, Rob. You know, because it was, we were just under about 200 houses, so I had way surpassed.
Mm-hmm.
And I
kind average of, rents. What were the average rents at the time?
Those rents were lower. They were probably $750.
Yeah, I was gonna say eight or nine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was around there. So it was lower. You know, tougher to manage. Again, I came out of California thinking I was a senior in real estate, and got to Florida and I was a freshman again. Mm-hmm. You know, every market's different. You got to learn the areas. You got to learn fundamentals, the landlord laws. You know, building your team of contractors. There's so many things of, you know, what areas are a deal, what areas are best to avoid. You know, these are all, you know, and you work with lots of, you know, individual markets. You know, every one of them's different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big bitter pill I had to swallow. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just turning over properties and this and that, and then all of a sudden this roof goes because, you know, you were cutting corners to rehab it because you didn't have as big a budget as you thought, and you know what I mean. And one thing I've learned about deferred maintenance, Rob, it always comes when you least want it to. People are like, deferred maintenance. Well, it defers for a while and then it comes due. So I was taught, get into as many properties as you can. Well, then what if you have to sell? Well, then there's selling costs. You don't have a lot of equity in each property. You know, today I sit at about 27% LTV. Mm-hmm. Over my whole portfolio. Now, some people are like, oh, you're way old fuddy-duddy. You're too conservative. Throw out the line. You know, I've been at the other end, you know, where it was much higher LTV. And I was, yeah, but I have so many properties. But that was actually what was sinking me instead of saving me. I don't know if any of this makes sense.
I'm just what 100% makes sense, right? Like, I had entered into a market that was a couple hours away from where I lived, where, you know, I got seduced by low prices and high rent to purchase prices that were older stock. And I bought a lot of product, right? And we did two things. We would buy properties, small multis, and fix them up and sell them turnkey to investors.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were like, this is great, but can you help us manage these assets? We're like, sure, we'll help you manage them. Before I knew it, we had 300 assets under management, all lower rental income, $500 to $600. Right.
Wow.
We owned a lot of the product ourselves, and we worked really, really hard, and we always made money on the you know, when we sold those assets, right up front. But over time, like, these asset values just kind of like degraded in value. Right. And valuable lesson I learned, and by the way, you talked about it right in the beginning, is you got to go into growth markets because you need those asset values over time to kind of keep pace with everything, because you need that equity buildup. Because I have a building today. I talk about it all the time. It's a triplex that I shut down because it's less expensive for me to shut it down than to keep it rented, right? I'm like, oh, maybe I'll turn it into a little park. But these are the things that that we learn as entrepreneurs, as real estate entrepreneurs, and every market is different, right? Like you enter every market, there's a different way to make money in that market, right? And you got to figure out who's making money in that market and why. And so why do you think this new construction piece, right? And you're helping investors build this portfolio. It's working because it sounds like you can keep the cost of production down, right? Of build down. The rentals are not the 1% rule, but they're not too far off, right? The ability to be able to have better product that stands the test of time because materials are better. That's another good reason. But Florida's growing like crazy. I guess that would be the other element, right?
And that's to our advantage. So a couple of things just to backtrack on what you said and agree with. Yes, turnover is huge. Until you own properties, like you said, we've both gone into some tougher areas. If you're turning over all the time, just the turnover costs, and then all of a sudden you have a loan as well where you have vacant, so you're paying on the mortgage like that. That slides you backwards. Now you have to make that up so quick. So that alone is absolutely key. And if you're wanting to be less involved, you want better properties. Because people, I'll have a good property manager. I'm sorry. If you're going to be in tougher areas, there's usually more involvement. Because mm-hmm. there's going to be more calls, more decisions, more problem solving. And I just didn't want that. So for this next go around with the new construction, we said to our investors, you can own less of better quality. And that's it. I mean, that's the simple play, Rob, because what I've learned is like, there is growth in Florida. Again, I've looking back over 24 years, I've made good money in cash flow, Rob, but I've made way more money in equity growth. Mm-hmm. So I don't depend on appreciation, but I do my best to get in its way. And historically, that's been a good plan for anyone that growth of real estate. That's not a dummy plan. That's a pretty good plan. Now you don't want to depend on it and say, wow, I'm going to buy this house today for 400 and I'm going to lose $500 a month and hope it goes up to 500 next year and selling. That's not what I'm talking about. We're in a position where you can hold without issue, without a lot of turnover, with good aesthetics, good growth patterns, and look long-term. And that's kind of what we do now. That's what we do with our clients, for myself. And I think with Florida, like you said, Rob, a key thing is the affordability still here. Yes, we've gone up in value and you've seen that. But like, for example, we have a lot of people that come out of California. They came out of California. I used to be out there. I get it. The landlord laws are not the best. There's a 13.4% state income tax. Florida has none, so that's attractive. But a lot of times California investors were leaving California just to go over the border to Salt Lake or up to Boise, Idaho. And those are beautiful markets. Don't get me wrong. But those markets right now are priced about $250,000 higher than our average Florida market. Mm-hmm. Yet the rents are the same and the average family income is the same. Mm-hmm. So what that tells me is we still have a lot of room for growth. Mm-hmm. And we have a more sustainability than a lot of areas. Even the growth that we've had, we were undervalued for a long time here in the most Florida markets.
Mm. Where do you focus on specifically in Florida?
Yeah, we avoid the popular markets. So right now we are not in Tampa. We are not in Orlando. We're definitely not in the Fort Lauderdale to Miami stretch. Like that's just real expensive down there. Mm-hmm. Where we are is Jacksonville. Jacksonville, Rob, when I left California in 2004, it was the most affordable coastal city in the nation. And wow. Those words don't normally go together, affordable coastal city. Think about mm-hmm. that. West Coast, it was non-existent. So Northeast Florida was big for us with Jacksonville, Palm Coast. Then we moved inland to Ocala and Citrus Springs and Inverness, been wonderful markets for us. And then a bunch of markets in Southwest Florida, kind of the greater Fort Myers area, several markets right around there, because that area was the fastest growing area in the nation through the pandemic.
Interesting. So what have you learned in this process, right? Because, you had to essentially kind of convert your business from rehabbers to builders, right? There was like a transition there, probably a learning curve that happened, right? What have you learned in that process?
A couple of things. One, starting from scratch is harder in the beginning, but so much easier later on. Because you can't, I mean, you've done enough rehabs, Rob, to see, you can't see a sewer main. You can't see behind a certain wall. Mm-hmm. You can't, sometimes they're all the roof we think is this old, but it's not showing up on the county record. You know, a lot of the guesswork is taken out of it. So that's really nice. Mm-hmm. Now, but I can't stress enough, the upfront is a little bit different. You know, you're not just going to an existing house and starting work, you know, and getting a roofing permit, maybe a plumbing permit. I mean, sometimes you're having to get, you know, the lot developed. There's a lot more steps up front to get it done. So that's something that you just got to get used to, mm-hmm. you know, and that's an important part of the game for sure. Also, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, and I would imagine that the majority of your investors, just to talk about the other side of it, right? Because there's the building side, there's the piece that you have to go through bringing these properties to life. But on the other side, I'd imagine a lot of your investors, like you said, are from other parts, other states, right? Not necessarily from Florida, or are they from Florida?
We have Florida investors for sure. But we got a lot of investors from the West Coast, a lot from the Northeast where I grew up. You know, they're sensible to see their own backyards don't really offer the returns they're looking for, the landlord laws, which I am adamant about people looking at their landlord laws for their individual state now. It's really changed over the last few years. So they're from all over. We also have a lot of international investors. Mm-hmm. That Florida has a pretty good buzz to it right now, which we're appreciative of. And so we come from all over. I'd say less than 20% are from Florida.
How many houses did you guys sell last year to
generate? We did $185 million in sales. We've built over 2,000 now. And right now our company is sitting on over 6,000 lots that we plan to build out in high growth areas of Florida. Okay. So you know too, it might be, we were acquired in January, a piece of our company by a large building group out of Texas, which is owned by Sumitomo. I don't know if you see Sumitomo in the news. They're a huge Japanese company, 331 years old. Wow. So they have a different way of looking at business. I know Warren Buffett is involved in different areas of their business. He's been pro on them. But for the division we're in, you know, this is, they look long-term. They wanted Florida. They wanted build to rent. And they do 17,000 houses worldwide, which is pretty special for us. And the reason why, Rob, you know, for any building you've done, even if you have a good balance sheet and you're doing a good job, you got to keep going into banks all the time to get this thing. We need an updated file, and you're always extending your building lines. It's exhausting. Mm-hmm. Now, and people are always saying, is this building company healthy? Are they going to go under? Now that we have partnered with them, well, they fund all of our build projects. We don't have to go to any banks anymore. Our parent company funds us. And that's really powerful for people to also say, hey, is your building company solvent? We're able to show a pretty healthy balance sheet. And that obviously puts people at ease.
Yeah. And a 300-year, right? History.
331 years old. I didn't even know companies went back that old, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think the oldest company is like 1,000 years old. Wow. And it's a restaurant. Like in that culture, they're generational, right? And they're they're literally generational. So it's pretty impressive. That's a lot of lots. I want to understand the psychological leap that you had to take, and maybe you didn't. Maybe it's just during the foreclosure crisis, you guys were doing hundreds, if not thousands, in a year, right? Yeah. I want to understand, like, help somebody understand how to go, kind of like that curve, right? Because you start talking about building 2,000 houses, somebody on this listening to this might just be like, "Man, I just want to build 100 houses," right? 50 houses, right? Tell me a little bit about your psychology. Help me understand the inner you, Jim.
Well, first of all, I had a really good partner. Again, my building partner and his dad, they had a management company first, and they were managing my personal portfolio. And we had already done things back and forth and had a good relationship. So this was an experiment, and we were willing to experiment. that's maybe one of the key things here, Rob. I mean, I was the old dog doing old tricks. I knew how to find an old house, fix it up, rent it, or sell it. I mean, that was my whole niche to wealth right there. I don't really know how to do much else. And so it was big to move away from that. But I could see so many pain points in that model that I had to be willing to, you know, the old Napoleon Hill, burn the ships. Mm-hmm. Remember that one for the for the old warrior battle? They showed up for that battle.
Conquistadors burned the ships.
They burned the ships behind them and said, we either win or we perish, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we really started to just stop doing rehabs and went into this. So I was willing to experiment with something new, still within my core competency. You know, it wasn't like a leap where I was like, oh, I rehab houses, so now I'm going to go buy car washes. And it's just like, that's a pretty big leap. Not that I know people make money, but I don't know anything. I'd be a real freshman in that. So this was a new experiment. And then I was willing to burn my ships. I don't rehab houses anymore. If people come to me and say, hey, will you find me an old house and fix it up? The answer is always no. I had to burn my ships in that old niche. And that was key. And by giving that up, again, I really, really believe in that mentor's advice almost a quarter century ago, Rob. Can you say your real estate niche in one sentence? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that can't change, because mine's changed. But that's what I do. I do build to rent properties in high growth areas in Florida now. Boom, that's it. And by giving myself the hyper focus of that, we could get on the inner circle. I mean, the what's it called? The inner track of better deals, better understanding. And then people also know where to go. You know, you and I will get off of this call and, you know, hopefully we'll stay in touch. But in a few months, someone's like, you know, I've been looking at this build to rent and I'm in Florida. You'd be like, I know that. Even if someone just says build to rent, I did someone on the podcast. You should talk to Jim. People know where to find you if you identify yourself in a very clear niche.
Yeah. I call that zoning a market, right? It's zero in on your target market or your prospect. Own the mind share of that market, network and build your database, and then engage your community, like in service. And I found that hyper focus is what separates people, right? Yeah. It's like, it's saying, this is what I do, and I stick to this thing, right? Get known for something, become famous at something, right?
Yeah.
Another way to put it.
One thing too, Rob, people say like, real estate investing is not exciting for me. And people might go, oh, that's terrible. But again, I was taught that if you really hone down in a niche, first of all, you're going to do better. You're going to be more competent. And it almost becomes boring, like a printing machine. Like, all right, we're going to crank out another. We're going to crank out another. And people are like, oh, well, that's terrible. I'd rather be thrown into this new this and that. And well, I have lots of excitement elsewhere. I take lots of family adventures. I love surfing. I'll have my adventure in the ocean.
Costa Rica somewhere, maybe.
Yeah. I'm part of the year actually in Costa Rica. So, but again, there's nothing wrong with getting so good at what you do that you just continue that you're not figuring it all out every time. That might feel exciting, but when you look at profitability, time away from your family, that can be a huge time suck and wallet suck.
Yeah. You know, it's getting comfortable with the boredom of mastery, right?
There it is. Great. And, well said.
And when you become a master at something, it's just like, you know, one of the ways to think about it, another way to think about it is, just look at a professional musician that plays a song that's a famous song, right? Like James Taylor, Fire and Rain, as an example. Like, how many times do you think James Taylor has played that song, right? But he's got to play it like it's the first time because somebody heard it for the first time, like in concert. And it's just like, do you think he's bored playing that song? 100% he has to be bored playing that song. But that is what a master does, right?
Yep.
What a master does. So let's talk about some of the bumps and bruises, right, during the foreclosure crisis. How did you navigate that whole process? Just curious.
Foreclosure process. Yeah, that was really hard because, I mean, talk about California. I mean, I don't see anything like that happening again for quite a while. But, you know, we lost 40% of rents, 50% of value. So even at a decent LTV, you were in trouble. So what we had to do is get medieval with our overhead, Rob. We really did cut to the bone, and I took a different path. I took a path I'm not suggesting people do, but I threw all of my chips back into the business to save it and protect our investors. Now, for me, it might have been a more of emotional. Well, Sarah, that I had a lot of close family and friends that were investors, but I kept them whole through the whole meltdown. Mm. You know, and that reputation spread. And so as we had finally held our feet, you know, and it was thin where I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it through this. We made it through just enough where, you know, I think if Peter Lynch said the best time to invest is when there's blood on the street, even if it's your own. Mm-hmm. That was, we kept our feet just long enough. So many people had just gone bankrupt and out, and the deals were just unbelievable. And we had built this reputation that we protected our investors through the downturn. They said, no, we want to hire you to start getting us these great deals. So we kept, you know, working right through it. So that was absolutely key. You know, I got real medieval on my overhead.
Jim, what was your model then when you were going, like, in 2006, 2007, 2000, what was your model at the time?
My model then was, I was just such a buy and hold guy. Most of them, I was just buying and holding for myself or with a partner. And that's where Rob, man, I mounted up properties in that 06, 07 that I bled me for 12 years and then finally was able to get rid of them, you know, kind of like that triplex you shut. So that was the model where I was like, well, holding property, you got to hold property, you hold property. It's going to go up. You're going to do it. There's some truth to that. But as we discussed before, how is it held in those first 5 years? Is it going to have turnover? Is it going to be ridiculous to manage? Is it? And I didn't look at that. And I was
so the investors that were with you were private lenders that had lent you money on those assets?
I was doing an old model that I don't do anymore where I would do all the work. So they would either put up the money and I'd sign on the debt, or they would sign up the debt and put up the money. So that's a pretty dangerous thing when you got people's credit on the line too. And I'm proud to say not one of my credit took some dings. Not one of our investors got a ding on their credit.
That's awesome.
We protected all of them through it. So I wouldn't recommend that model. Look, if you're going to go into a partnership with someone, you're putting their credit up, be ready to back that property.
Yep. So when all these opportunities started opening up in Florida, because, I mean, you guys were like ground friggin' zero, right, during that time.
Yes.
I mean, it was in 2008, I bought a bunch of properties with a wealthy guy here in this area. And I look back and say, that was the smartest thing I've ever done. I should have bought 1,000 more, right? Yeah. I should have bought 1,000 more. But it was a scary time because every sign in the yard was either foreclosure or short sale. It seemed like Lehman Brothers had just filed for bankruptcy. It was crazy, right?
Was crazy times.
What did you do? How did walk me through like that 2008, 2009, 2010? Like, what, it sounded like people started coming to you and saying, hey, help us find these deals. Were you selling, you know, bulk assets? Were you
it's funny. I talked to my sales team about this, about, you know, singles and doubles. There's always people, and we work with some larger institutions come by, oh, we're going to buy 50, 100 properties. And that's great. But it used to be the opposite in the foreclosure days. Hey, this guy's got a package of 50 properties he can buy. It's like just this carrot on the stick. And I was like, you know what? Every Monday, if I wake up and by Friday, I've got three new contracts on houses I've handpicked, I'm probably better off. And I'd see friends that would try to work this 50 house deal.
No, it never came to fruition. No, I was like, all the tapes that, like, everybody's like, oh, I got this. It's like,
this
never.
Tape. Yeah. It's like, oh, God. Here. And so they worked this thing for 4 or 5 months and would fall through. And I'm like, I just did my three a week and then it treated us well, you know? And then that even picked up from there. So yeah, it was really private money groups. Mm-hmm. Coming to me and saying, hey, we either have a group of investors that want to get into your area. And then I had private money guys approach me and say, hey, we want to create a loan program for you. You know, we trust you on this. We see it. You give us a piece of the action. So I really just started to do some joint ventures with people that would hire me and then also people that wanted to partner with me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had access to, you know, which is unheard of in 2009, 100% financing, because I was getting us into the property so cheap. They liked the risk of it. I wasn't have to go to any banks. You know, I just showed my business plan to these few private money groups and they liked it. You know, they had, some of them had approached me and they said, great, we're in. And so that kind of like what I talked about now, that ability of financing, Rob, to scale is so key. Mm-hmm. So 09, I was able to do it because I didn't have to go to a bank and convince them, look, I'm buying this property below replacement cost. This is what it sold for in 1978. Like, I was able to just go. And that's kind of how we feel now with our building operation, having a parent company fund us without having to convince banks. So that is absolutely key. You know, I think there's three parts. You got to be able to find the deals. You got to be able to finance the deals. And you got to be able to manage the deals, whether that means fixing it up and selling it, or, you know, building it and selling it, or renting it. There's only those three pieces. And I got lucky, I think, holding our feet through 08 by 09, you know, we had a lot of money coming to us to put to the market, and we made people a lot of money with it.
So the model today is you build these and you sell them to other investors that are looking for a long-term return, typically business owners that, you know,
owners, professionals, a lot of doctors and dentists that I've met through the years and had, you know, worked with for years. So a lot of successful professionals that don't necessarily want to leave their jobs or careers, but they want to have some real estate in their overall portfolio.
Okay. And so that's creating your active income, right? How are you continuing to build that passive income side, or are you even focused on that?
No, I'm still very active in our build to rent ownership, you know, so, and always building my own portfolio. But the good news is I got at that point where I went into higher homes, you know, just like I'm teaching here, and there's higher cash flows and very little debt. So I'm always adding properties to my portfolio a lot slower than I used to. And I have a lot of ownership in build to rent properties. So I'm always growing that side. So there's, you know, obviously the transactional for what we do, but then there's also what does the build to rents for our company produce as well? Because we hold properties as well.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be part of it, right? It's like you're making the business is turning cash, right? And bills get paid, people get paid, families get fed, right? And then you're converting that cash, and your business, I would assume, would be also be building a portfolio of properties, better properties this time, right?
Much better. Yeah, there's much no comparison.
Better assets, less, you know, a lot less headache in that 1-4 space. So that's interesting. Do you find you have a preference? 4 units, 3 years, 2 units? Does it matter?
You know, I've owned all of them. It depends on what you're trying to do. You know, I think that, you know, quads are unicorns. They're harder to get approved. They're harder to find. I think that for people who are looking to grow their portfolio and just starting out, I think it's a great way. Because like what we talked about, you can leverage a Fannie Freddie loan to the max. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I work in all three of our properties. But I think quads are obviously something that are pretty interesting. And that could produce the biggest cash flow growth for you, because has the best odds. And then, you know, duplexes are an interesting combo because you don't get as many renters under one roof, but they sit in this interesting little zone where, yeah, it's an investment property, but we've sold plenty of duplexes to retail buyers. You know, it is not uncommon now for retail buyers say, yeah, I'm gonna buy it and live in one side and rent the other. You know, that's become more and more known. So it'd be tough for me to say which one, Rob, because I've worked in all of them. But I think for investors who are really serious, they're wanting to get in, you know, do a mixture of them, and especially a few quads is great. Because again, Fannie Freddie will only finance you for up to 10 properties. For anyone who doesn't understand that, that's the better government financing that a lender will be able to get you. And, you know, you want to take advantage of those because you'll still get loans after that, but they're at a little higher interest rate, more down, and that might be something you're not wanting to do.
Jim, what's your outlook for 2024?
Much better than 2022, 2023. Mm-hmm. Look, when 2022 hit and those rates just started to, you know, skyrocket, the brakes hit, screech, even here in Florida for a few months, and we're going, what the heck? And I feel that the Fed has an interesting history. If you look it up, Rob, you know, anytime they've ever had these quick spikes in raising the rates, within 18 to 24 months of starting that, they've trailed back down, and normally a big trail down, like 2 points. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty healthy. So this started in June of 2022. My thinking, and a lot of thinking of people much smarter than me, is the Fed can only press this so high. We're kind of at a fragile state, and they're going to have to start to trail that back down. They're trying to slow down the inflation, the markets. And I think, you know, right or wrong, there's been some of that done. But I think 2024, that rates are going to come back into favor even more. And that's going to accelerate more growth in certain areas of the U.S. Certain areas of the U.S. are going to struggle, just like in 08. You know, there were parts, Rob, in 08, people don't talk about that were fine. I had friends in some different markets. They said, if I didn't watch the news, I wouldn't even know about this big meltdown. I was like, thanks a lot. I'm stopping over here.
Florida, I mean, all the sand states, I mean, got crushed. I mean, here in the Northeast, it was bad. But it wasn't like you guys. I mean, we experienced 50%. Like, there was neighborhoods, there was pockets, right?
Yeah.
There was pockets where we were that experienced, like, I was like, wait, this thing peaked at 350. It's now $1.50. Like, how is this not a good plan, right? Like, the rents are $1,500 a month. Like, this is ridiculous. And then we just dollar cost average those properties down.
Yep.
So where do you want to take this in the future? Like, what's this look like 3 years from now? You guys just made a big move. Like, getting bought by this company was a big move.
Yeah. And it's right. Perfect. They have shown, you know, a lot of the builders that they bought where my partner was going out and talking, you know, you can leave in like 2 years after a thing like this, but a lot of them were still on 10, 12 years later. And we'd like to keep doing this. So they give you good autonomy, good support. So we'd like to keep growing this. You know, we were at a great dinner last week with some people that were now a part of us. And we see this as being able to pick up, just like we went from Jacksonville to a dozen other markets in Florida. We see us being able to grow this into both Texas and Tennessee are our next two moves. We like the fundamentals. We like the state. We like the landlord laws, and our parent company is already set up there. So we see this as an exciting opportunity to grow that and replicate the model. And again, with our investors, they might say, well, I like that state. I've been wanting to go there. So we see it as becoming more of a larger service to more investors using the same model, though, just kind of rinsing and repeating.
Just out of curiosity, where in Tennessee?
We haven't quite known it. They're in a couple of different areas. You know, Nashville has gotten pretty expensive, but there's some other, you know, more affordable markets like Knoxville and other areas like that.
Yeah. We just opened an office in Knoxville.
Yeah. Knoxville is a great little market. I mean,
Knoxville's great.
Good lifestyle, you know, has good affordability index, you know, so I think Tennessee has some real solid fundamentals.
Yeah. For sure. Okay. Let's switch it real fast. And let me ask you some personal questions. You said adventures. What kind of adventures do you go on?
Yeah, well, we could take quite a few adventures. So that was one of my things. It's not what, it's the how, Rob. I've always said I want to be able to have that legendary family life my parents couldn't afford and I always dreamed of. So we take 6-week RV adventures. You know, we bought a house in Costa Rica a few years ago. We live there, work and play from there a few months out of the year. Mm-hmm. You know, we've gone to Australia. We're going to Ireland this coming month.
That's cool.
So, you know, we've gone and done service work in Guatemala and in Mexico. You know, we've explored the Bahamas and the Caribbean islands. You know, we've gone up to Nova Scotia for you know, weeks at a time. We kind of go all over. We're definitely more warm weather, but we will venture some of the cold.
Oh yeah. I'm all about the warm weather. What part of Costa Rica, just out of curiosity?
We bought a house in a town called Nosara, Costa Rica, which I've been going to for about 25 years.
Yeah, Nosara's great. I started taking my family down to Santa Teresa, Costa Rica.
Right? Yeah, I've heard that's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. Great. Yeah. If you're a surfer, great surf place. Right?
Yeah, I've heard.
Great yoga, great surf place. We looked at possibly buying a house, but I couldn't justify the numbers, right?
It's an emotional move, Rob. And one of the most emotional reasons is you got to pay cash. So, you know, paying cash is, I don't like to leverage now, but I like some leverage. So I was like, what do you mean there's no loans? And we actually were able to work a little bit of owner financing for 2 years, you know, just to get some. And now we had to pay it off. And the good news is it has appreciated, but if you're going to Costa Rica, it is more of an emotional purchase.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be use, and then we get great vacation rental out of it when we're not there, but you do have to pay cash. You lose that leverage effect.
Yeah. 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 I just said, you know what, I'll spend, I think I was sharing with you, right? I want to get out of Dodge when it gets cold around here. So yeah. we'll spend a month out of the year in Costa Rica.
Oh, right? Nice.
And then we'll spend the rest of the time of the year in Florida somewhere, right? Yeah, we don't know where in Florida. You know, I like St. Petersburg. We talked about that. But who knows? I might go visit you in Jacksonville.
Right? Yeah. Well, I'm in St. Augustine, which is
in St. Augustine. Oh yeah. That's great.
It's a great little city. It is just if you like Charleston and Savannah, it's got that old charm to it. And it's actually older. It's the oldest city in America.
It's the oldest city. Yeah, yeah. I just had a friend of mine move there. Right.
Oh yeah.
And he absolutely loves St. Augustine.
Great little town. So it's got everything from little shops to really cool restaurants to beach communities and activities and yeah, good fishing. There's good stuff here.
Okay. Well, I may have to go explore that. I think that's the biggest thing. Florida's so big that it's you just have to explore the different parts, right? Because even within St. Pete, you've got the beach, which feels very different than the Bay Area.
Completely
two different worlds.
They really are.
Yeah.
I think people think St. Pete's like, it's a cool little downtown over there. Like it's its own city.
Oh, it's its own little ecosystem.
It is, for sure.
For sure. Well, hey, I appreciate you spending time, Jim, with us. I think what you've done is helped a lot of people that are on this journey, right? Kind of understand maybe some of the pitfalls along that journey that I see a lot of investors get trapped in, right?
Yeah.
As they're building things, right? You know, sometimes you're building something and you realize you actually put your ladder up against the wrong wall. It's not the wall you should have been building, right? But you still learned in that process. I think a lot of us kind of go through that. Any words of advice as people are building their thing?
Again, niche is really important, and then it's okay to experiment outside the niche to try to transition to the next. And like for build to rent, you don't have to start with a ton of houses. You heard we started with a small group, and you know, even just try building one. And I wouldn't have given that advice a year and a half, 2 years ago, because the material supply issue was just so dreadful for really small builders. But I think that's starting to come online. But you can always experiment with one. You know, if you're a rehabber out there, and you want to try building one house, it's probably not going to kill you, you know, and you'll learn so much from that first house. So try one. Same thing with investors out there. If you've owned older properties, you know, maybe look at trying one new construction, you know, see where it is. Maybe it is a higher buy-in and different what you're looking for, but it's always good to, again, experiment, put something on the track and see how it actually performs against your norm. That's how I've continued to evolve, Rob.
Mm. Jim, and if people wanted to find you, if they wanted to own something in Florida, right? Rentals in Florida, how do they find you? What's the best way?
Yeah, you can go, if you want to look at jjplaybook.com. That's something my wife and I wrote about our journey into real estate and how we came into build to rent. So you can go to jjplaybook.com, or you're welcome to look right at our building company, southernimpressionhomes.com.
Okay. southernimpressionhomes.com or jjplaybook.com. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll make sure that we put that in the notes.
Cool.
Jim, thanks so much. I know the grid community is going to thank you for this. I know I learned a lot today, so thank you. And as always, man, just have a great day. Nice meeting you.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
Take care. Bye.